Hello, friends, and good afternoon. This is the Out of This World radio program with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from, we're broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington on 1150 AM, just outside Seattle. But today I'm at the wonderful New Renaissance Bookstore in Portland, Oregon, where tonight I will be doing a presentation on the Immortal Peace Project, tonight at 6:30 p.m., from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., and if you are in the Portland area or close to here, you're welcome to come. I'd love to meet you. I know we have a lot of listeners in the Portland area. The program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomenon, UFOs, metaphysics, and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and beyond. We will have only the best psychic scientists and others in the world on our program, and I guarantee, my friends, it'll be the most interesting radio program you've ever listened to, as you will hear information here that you will simply not hear elsewhere. We are also one of the top-rated talk show programs in the Seattle area, and we are also the fastest-growing psychic and UFO radio program in the world with listeners in over 60 countries. And I'm also told that by reliable sources that we have many listeners off-planet as well. So for my many, many friends and listeners both on the planet and off the planet, welcome to Out of This World Radio. We are entirely supported by donations, and for those who'd like to donate, please go to our website at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just click on the donate button. I also have a new column on my webpage called Ask Ted. When you click on the website at www.outofthisworld1150.com, just go to About Us, and then on the right side, click on Ask Ted, and you're welcome to ask any spiritual purpose questions you like. I'd be happy to give you any free advice I can. We're also looking for sponsors and advertisers for the show. Any advertising on the program will have a worldwide audience for your goods and services. The purpose of my radio program is to raise consciousness, to make this world a better place to live, and I know with everyone's help we can make this planet a better place. I wanted to tell everyone briefly about a Galactic Wisdom Conference I'm having at the Inn at Gig Harbor from March 6th to the 8th. Located only 10 minutes from Tacoma or 40 minutes from Seattle. It's a wonderful facility. We have lots of interesting and guests coming on, famous psychics and people who've had contact with UFOs. For more information, please see our website at www.galacticwisdomconference.com. From now through Valentine's Day, we're running a special for the three-day event for just $197. Or if you want to come for the day, it's just $97. And I would appreciate if there's anyone out there who would like to have a free admission to the event, please give me a call at 509-750-9793 or send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. And in exchange for your help, I'm looking for two or three volunteers to help me out in organizing the conference, taking registrations and setting up tables, that kind of thing. Be happy to give you a pre-registration. Today we have very lucky to have Major Ed Dames on for the first hour. And Ed, are you there?
I'm here.
Wonderful, wonderful. I just want to mention briefly, before we begin, I'd like to thank the many wonderful sponsors of this show, including my dear friend Carol, who's been designing my website and providing a lot of wonderful support. My dear friend Ann Nelson, business professor at Walla Walla College, who helped me start my program. And my dear friend Michiko Hayashi of the Immortal Peace Project in Tokyo, Japan. My friends elsewhere who've been supporting the show, my angelic and earthly family, as well as my wonderful sound engineer, Eric Ryder, and my station manager, Eric Krema, without whose help and support this program would not have been possible. Ed, welcome to the program today.
Thank you.
So good to have you on. I know we were on my program almost a year ago now, and I know a lot of things have happened since then. For those who don't know Major Ed Dames, he's one of the world's foremost remote viewers and a creator of technical remote viewing. He's a thrice decorated military intelligence officer and original member of the U.S. Army prototype remote viewing training program. He's served as both training and operations officer for the U.S. government's top secret psychic espionage unit. He's an ROTC distinguished military graduate of the University of California, Berkeley. And between 1979 and 1983, Major Dames served as an electronic warfare officer and scientific and technical intelligence officer. He was also the technical consultant for Suspect Zero, a Tom Cruise, Paula Wagner feature film, where he played the role of an FBI remote viewing instructor. He currently serves as the executive director for the Matrix Intelligence Agency, a private consulting group. His websites are www.learnrv.com, www.freeremoteviewingdvd.com, and www.thekillshot.com. And Ed, with that, I'd like to welcome you to the show today. Thanks so much for coming on.
A pleasure, Ted.
Well, we spoke earlier last year, of course, about the kinds of things that you saw happening in the world. And I always enjoy listening to you, Ed, and your forecast for the world, for the United States and the planet. What kinds of things, if you don't mind me asking, do you see for the world this year?
Chaos.
Do you see
The collective consciousness is chaotic. Collective unconscious is chaotic, so that's going to spill out into the kinds of things you see. And I have seen.
Are they focused in particular countries around the world, or are they just?
It's a confluence of events, geophysical, geopolitical, socioeconomic. If we're just talking about the U.S., we're looking at martial law soon, not nationwide, but in parts of the nation, and it will spread. So martial law, definitely.
Why, to ask a dumb question, Ed, why would there be martial law? Would there be discontent over the economy, for example? Or?
No. That would just be a catalyst. There are many different catalysts or excuses that Agenda 21 and the U.S. We have no government, Ted. There is no government in the U.S. All the senators and congressmen and president are owned. They're owned by moneyed interests, period. Mm-hmm. And those interests I feel very threatened by us. We're all becoming enemies of the state, and that's why martial law will happen. And there will be no next election. There won't be another election. This is the last one. That's my gut feeling.
Mm-hmm. And by next election, you mean elections this year or next year?
I don't believe there will be another presidential election, period.
I see. Well, that's interesting. If you were John Q. Citizen out there or Jane Q. Citizen, how would you prepare for such a thing? Just try to maintain a positive attitude as best as you can and go on with your lives? Or what would you recommend people?
Got to get out of the cities. Almost, not all cities, but most cities. You must get out. They'll be sealed off by the Department of Homeland Security. And all the ingress and egresses to the city will be sealed. So if you're in the city, it's like escape from L.A. That's the problem right there. And when food and water runs out, we've got nothing but Mad Max scenarios in the cities. So if you have the wherewithal to do so, get out of the cities and don't stay near the West Coast, because the Fukushima radiation plumes will pump over time. Will really render both the marine and the airborne plumes from Fukushima, which I predicted Fukushima, as you know, years ago for the Japanese TV. That's the gift that keeps on giving. It is the most horrendous man-made disaster in human history, and there's no way to stop that now. So the West Coast will be off limits if you have small children, particularly. Even potassium iodine tablets will not help them in the end. If you're older, it doesn't make much difference, because it would take about 10 years to develop serious cancers or leukemia. So you can live out your life on the West Coast, out of the cities, in a fairly well-to-do state of being. That's a pretty gloomy picture, isn't it?
Well, you know, I have to tell you that after we spoke about 8 to 10 months ago, I went off and I, in anticipation of that plume from Fukushima, I did take a bunch of water samples off the Pacific, and I sent them to both the laboratory at the State of California and also at the University of Wisconsin laboratories in Madison, Wisconsin, where they tested for radiation. And the only thing they found was potassium, I believe it was K40, radioactive potassium, which is actually left over from the old nuclear bomb tests back in the 50s and 60s. And so I scratched my head and I wondered, well, what happened to this stuff? It's not there. And then this is just what I've heard. I don't have, of course, personal firsthand experience in this, but I've heard that we do have friends off planet, benevolent spiritual entities who've come in and cleaned up the Pacific. But I have heard a second thing too recently, that there are parts of the ocean now that is experiencing some radiation, because the Japanese government still They're still not cleaning it up. They're still pumping 85,000 gallons of radioactive water.
No, it's a Chernobyl a day, and it bioaccumulates in life forms. You won't find it in the water so much. It's going to bioaccumulate, and it already has to a great deal, and in life forms, particularly fish. The higher level food chains will bioaccumulate it, and so you don't. After about 6 months from now or a year, you don't want to be eating tuna from them. Or any fish from the Pacific Ocean, and that's just the start.
Sure.
The airborne plumes will, and the marine plumes both will hit Vancouver, Seattle, and particularly hard over the years that will bioaccumulate. Mm-hmm. And like I say, young people should not be living in those areas.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, it's certainly a situation that the world has to keep in touch with, Ed.
The world doesn't have to keep in touch with it. There's nothing the world can do. It will keep in touch with the world.
Right.
We've created a monster.
Right. Well, the thing that I've noticed, too, if you look at the major media sources like CNN and the other major media outlets, they don't seem to mention it at all. I mean, unless I've missed something, Ed, I don't hear of anything on
that. No, you're right. What happens is if a government cannot control something, whether it's a UFO, if it's UFOs shutting down a military ICBM guidance systems or whatever, if there's nothing that a government can do, they're not going to tell their populace that they don't know what to do. Governments have to always seem like they're in control, and that's the simple reason.
I see. So they don't mention it on the major news sources simply because they know they can't do
right. Well, but covertly, the Japanese government almost a year ago now started to engage in discussions with the country of Myanmar and China also to move the entire population of Tokyo out. American businessmen have moved long ago, but the Japanese government really knows how serious this is, and they need to move their population out of Tokyo. Watch the next generation of northern Japanese kids. If you think you want to... The mutations at Chernobyl, I used to live next to Chernobyl. Take a look at the mutations from the kids there, and Fallujah with the depleted uranium dust in the Iraq War. That's the kind of mutations you're going to see very, very soon in the next generation of northern Japanese.
Hmm. Well, I for one certainly hope. I think Japan's a very beautiful country and very beautiful people, and I certainly hope that doesn't happen, Ed.
Well, that's a halcyon perspective, Ted, and you need to take those rose-colored glasses off sometimes and really look. I know where you're coming from. I can see your heart. I can see all that. But this is reality, and we are not coherent enough as a not only a nation, as a world. We don't have the coherence to prayer could work. Prayer is the most strongest thing in the universe, but we need to be coherent and have enough threshold number of people to be able to affect something, change. And I don't think we're there.
Well, I agree with you, Ed, but I also agree that prayer is a wonderful thing, and I think that in the future, I think we can use prayer and our power and positive thinking to really remedy almost any situation.
I agree with you, but I think that's a very distant future, not on our watch. You and I.
Well,
that's
I have
my
to.
Feeling.
Okay, no, that's fine. That's fine. That's why I wanted to have you on today and see, because you're an excellent remote viewer, Ed, and I wanted to see what you saw for the future.
Also, they don't call me Dr. Doom for nothing.
My commanders
used to hate me. I said, don't shoot the messenger, boss. This is what the KGB is going to do to you and our children. This is the way they think. Dialectic materialism has nothing to do with spirit and heart and angels. This is a different point of view.
Sure.
And so, you know, I just deal with the facts.
Sure. Well, there was a prediction by Nostradamus way back in the 16th century who said that by the 2030s that we would be embarking on 1,000 years of spiritual peace and prosperity, where we would have true spiritual growth for about 1,000 years, after which, Ed, he forecasted that we would move off planet and become a spacefaring species.
I think that's correct.
Great. That's great. Yeah, I think that's true, too. And I think we are in for some challenge. I like to you could say challenges
that's
in
a
the
nice
future.
Euphemism. Yeah.
Challenges in the future. But I'm confident that we as a humanity will work things out ultimately. And so.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, that's we have a destiny, but We have some experiences that we need to get under our belt first before we realize the consequences of our actions. I mean, look at nuclear weapons. Madness. Mm-hmm. Who could create more of an idea of madness than the creation of nuclear weapons?
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly I think we've made progress, certainly since the 80s, on disarmament. I think that the main, and I'd love your opinion on this too, the chances are, I guess, that there's always a chance that some rogue nation would have a nuclear bomb to cause havoc, like, for example, North Korea.
Yeah. Each month, a major intelligence agency, of which I am director, we have a project, Firefly, and each month we monitor the current most threatening nuclear terrorist threat. And we watch the people who are trying to acquire klystron tubes. I mean, we've got people in the Mideast that hate us. They also have a whole lot of money they got over the years from oil. The Russian mafia, I live in St. Petersburg, Russia now. We moved from Ukraine because our house was blown up and there's blood and guts all over the front street. We got caught in an artillery crossfire. So I moved to St. Petersburg. The Russian mafia has all those pieces, those nice pieces to put together a weapon and assemble it somewhere like Mexico. Get it into mm-hmm. the country. So we watch that very closely. But all of that, about 6 months ago, was eclipsed in terms of just eclipsed by Fukushima radiation in the air. In other words, Fukushima is doing more damage than nuclear terrorism could do.
Hmm. Well, that's too bad. I know I have a lot of people listening now in Tokyo and throughout Japan on my program. And actually, I'm having a very interesting gentleman, Ikan Derive, you may know him. He's a remote viewer. He's actually Scottish, but he lives in Japan. And I'll be asking him the same questions I am now. What he sees for the future. He'll be on for the next on our, my next hour.
Southern Japan will be okay, but Northern Japan will not be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let me see. What do you see in terms of okay, we'll have some rough patches of challenges ahead. When do you see it getting better for humanity? Do you see a timeline for that, or is that rather fluid for people?
No, after the kill shot sequence, very serious solar flares that I've talked about and predicted quite a while. Mm-hmm. After that, we'll have infrastructure collapse because of the kill shot. Power grids will go down. Many satellites will go down. Massive solar flares will affect the X-rays will take out satellites. Coronal mass ejection, protons from the sun will take down power grids and pump a lot of heat into Earth's southern hemisphere. Talked about this a lot. After that happens, we've got a pretty bad situation for a good number of years. And then in the out years, it looks like there really is a 12-degree pole shift where the geography of the Earth changes. Mm-hmm. And after that happens, it's hard to tell. I know that the ozone layer is metastasizing. I did a contract for Lawrence Rockefeller a number of years ago, atmospheric ozone depletion, projected mm-hmm. consequences, and remedial technologies. And we, as a team, military team, I hired all the best and the brightest from the top secret team. Mm-hmm. We described the situation where the ozone layer is actually metastasizing. You don't have just larger holes at the poles. You've got a thinning ozone layer. And mm-hmm. that's the most serious thing of all in terms of life on Earth. Life could not have evolved without, as we know, it could not have evolved without the formation of the ozone layer 2.5 billion years ago. And if that goes, and it's very tenuous, then we are in serious trouble as a world. Mm-hmm. It's irreparable. But we do see, we had an appendix that we delivered to Lawrence Rockefeller, and he said that there is all of a sudden another race from somewhere else that actually comes to Earth and helps reestablish the ozone layer. But that's really far out there, and we can't put a timeline on it.
Interesting. Well, I have been put in touch, actually, with some benevolent, very advanced entities from the Galactic Alliance. They're humans, mostly human, Ed, all spiritually advanced, and I know that they're working behind the scenes to do what they can to try to really help us out. Because I think ultimately, which is nice, and I want to thank them so much And I know they're listening today. Oh, they're here. They're right here, actually. I just picked up on the welcome to the program. They themselves, I know that from my conversations with them, they themselves don't want us to destroy ourselves. I mean, we could have. And they've told me, and I'd love to your take on your opinion on this too, Ed, that in the past, during the 80s and the 70s and 60s, of course, when we had this Cold War with the then Soviet Union, that there were several times where our generals and their generals actually hit the launch button for nuclear weapons, but they were disabled because the benevolent ETs didn't want us to destroy ourselves.
I mentioned that many years ago on a Coast to Coast radio show that the button, the finger was on the button at least three times since 1955, us and them.
Right.
And I won't go into the detail about the nature of those particular beings, but yes, they stopped the war from initiating. And you know what? I have to tell you the truth. There will never be on this planet ever a nuclear slugfest, because
wonderful,
those guys out there know where every single warhead on the part of every nation is. They allowed Fukushima and Nagasaki to happen so that we could be aware of the consequences of our action. But this planet is a garden, and souls are harvested from this planet. Mm-hmm. And it's a garden that we are not allowed for any particular generation to destroy. So there will never be, nor would there have ever been, a nuclear slugfest. They can shut every single weapon down, whether it's in storage, in a silo, in a tube. My father-in-law was the navigation officer on a Soviet boomer.
Really?
When he and I met a number of years ago, we had interesting friction.
I bet you did.
Now I'm living and sleeping with the enemy. I'm, you know, married to a beautiful Russian girl. Things change.
How funny. Now, if you had married a Russian lady, let's say 40 years ago, Ed, you probably would have been highly scrutinized, don't you think?
No, 40 years ago, I married a Chinese girl. I have two young sons. One is one of the most brilliant scientists in this country. He's an MIT professor, only at 31 years old. 32, uh-huh. And so my sons are half Chinese, and my stepson is Russian, my wife is Russian, and mm-hmm. Russia and China are the future, so Lex Luthor ain't got nothing on me. Mama didn't raise no fool. I can see what's coming. It's the end of the U.S. as a superpower. We're flailing about right now trying to start another war because the military-industrial complex is the only income we have. You know how it goes. History repeats itself, but China and Russia are the future.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I used to live in India. I lived in India for about 2.5 years. And namaste to all my friends in India. I know they're listening from New Delhi and other places in India. And I just want to say that one of the most important lessons I learned in that from that experience said was that we are all God's children. In other words, we all have the spark of the Creator within us. And maybe I'd sound like an idealist,
I couldn't agree with you more. We have a piece of eternity in us, yes.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And so when I see another human being, let's say from India or from China or Japan or from Africa or Europe, we're all part of that same, we're all God's children. In other words, we're all related. We all have that spark, with that beautiful spark within us. So why fight? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Fighting.
No, of course, it's nonsense. It's insanity, Ted. It's insane.
Yeah. It is insanity, and I think that I agree with you. Nostradamus is right in the sense that in the future we will have we will experience true peace and prosperity on this planet. But of course, we have some challenging times ahead of us who is going to test us. I wanted to mention briefly to tell you just a real quick station break for those who are just tuning in. This is Out of This World Radio with your host Ted Marr. Broadcasting on KKNW on 1150 AM from the beautiful studios here in Bellevue, Washington. Today, I'm actually at the wonderful New Renaissance Metaphysical Bookstore in Portland. It's a wonderful place. I'm all set up here. I'll be giving a presentation tonight from 6:30 to 8:30 PM. So if you are in the Portland area or close, please come by, and I will be giving a presentation on the Emoto Peace Project. I had the late Dr. Masaru Emoto on my show, Ed, last July, July 25th. And during that time, I asked him about his intention experiments. And I'm sure you know about how he would take like two glasses of water, Ed, and one would be where he would send messages of love and light to the one glass of water. And on the molecular level, these beautiful molecular formations of like almost like snowflake. Snowflake.
I'm familiar with the experiments. Yes.
Great. Well, I asked Dr. Emoto on air whether that would work to create world peace, and he said that yes, it should. So at 3:30 p.m. on July 25th last year, I asked Dr. Emoto and my many listeners in over 60 countries around the world to send love and light to the Palestinians and the Israelis fighting in the Gaza Strip and asking for a brief ceasefire. So I didn't think much about it after that. The program ended at 4 o'clock Seattle time. I went home where I was staying, and at 8:30 p.m., I turned on CNN. Usually I don't watch CNN, but I turned it on to see what was going on in the world. I was just curious. And the Israelis and the Palestinians had just agreed to a 12-hour ceasefire where they would exchange prisoners and food and medical supplies. And I thought, oh, my goodness, it works. So that's why I'm a big supporter of the Emoto Peace Project in Tokyo. They have wonderful staff there, and they really are trying to create a better and happier world. But I was wondering, Ed, what you see for the do you think that the government will have disclosure eventually on UFOs and extraterrestrials? Do you
no.
see that happening?
No, not our government. I think the Japanese government will, because they our government will not. But I believe the Japanese government, that's my guess.
Interesting.
For technical reasons that I don't want to go into.
Okay, that's fine. I'm just curious. I know in remote viewing, is it difficult when you see something in the future, Ed, is it difficult to like say for certain a specific time, but you just see something in the future? For example, when you say the Japanese government may be disclosing extraterrestrial contact, would they be doing that in the next year, 5 years, maybe?
No, it's very, very difficult. The time it took 10 years to solve the search problem. Now we can get a target, a missing child, or a gold treasure down to within about 60 feet. But mm-hmm. the time problem is still a bugbear for us, and I'm not sure it can ever be solved because mind, we use the unconscious, as you know, connected with matrix, what we call from whence all form arises. The unconscious is outside of time. Mind is outside of time. And because of that, it looks down upon this broad panoply of events through time. And we have to actually use a lot of temporal qualifiers to determine not exactly where we are, but just generally where we are in time when we perceive something up ahead. When we perceive something up ahead, it's a fait accompli. If it's a big event, it already exists in time. And it's very easy to pick up. If it's a smaller thing, it's more difficult. But no, in terms of temporal location, calendrical time is a construct. That doesn't work. So what we do is we bracket things. For instance, the use of the next nuclear weapon in anger, we know will occur. We feel will occur on the Korean Peninsula, without going into technical details. And there, we try to bracket that. What will we see? What will be the nearest preceding event? That recognizable event that we'll see before that happens. And that's the only, for instance, the International Kite Festival or something like that. Mm-hmm. And we do a series of those, and that way we get a sense of how close we are to the event that we're describing, but trying to put a calendrical moment on it, we can't do it yet. I don't know if we ever can.
One of the things that I learned from the intention experiment I did with Dr. Emoto last July, Ed, was that people's thoughts in a positive way can help situations in a good way. And do you think it'd be worth trying if I asked all my listeners around the world and everyone listening now to send love and light to North Korea to help them solve their own problems without threatening a nuclear bomb or a war?
Yeah, but it has to be discreet. You have to know it can't be general. It can't be a fuzzy set. You have to absolutely say, for instance, okay. The president and vice president used to ask to say, Dames, I want this guy overthrown. And I knew what I'd say, okay, Mr. President, okay, what do you would you need to see in order for you to say he's been overthrown? Well, because I knew what the answer was. They didn't know. So I had to say, okay, if this could, the Secretary of Defense went down or had an accident, would that help? Well, maybe. Well, how about the Vice President himself and the Secretary of Defense? Well, that might be it, because they didn't know what they wanted. It was a fuzzy set with a fuzzy goal, and that's how goals start. But they need to be discreet, and when they're discreet, we need to see, we want exactly this, then prayer can be effective.
Well, I just spontaneously thought if we sending light and love to North Korea now is too general. In other words, we need some sort of event, like, for example, having them approach South Korea about lessening tensions or getting rid of their nuclear weapons, something along those lines. So you're looking for something specific, is that right?
Yeah. Rather than peace meetings or something like that. Anything would help, of course.
Okay.
And even the general fuzzy stuff helps, too. But it's just more effective. You can facilitate things much more effectively when you know exactly what you're after. And because the permutations involved in something like that are tremendous. You've got what the U.S. public doesn't know, most of the world doesn't know, is who's really in charge of North Korea, those kinds of things. And so if you're focused on the wrong direction, then you wasted your energy.
I see. Well, if you don't mind, shall we do a quick intention experiment now where we could send love and light to North Korea? And we could do kind of a benchmark, something discreet, like that they would engage in peace negotiations with South Korea with the aim of ridding the entire Korean Peninsula of all nuclear weapons, both in the North and, I don't know if the South has any, but certainly making it a nuclear-free zone.
No, I'm all for that.
Okay, well, let's do that for a few minutes, friends. To my listeners all over the world, in North America, Europe, the Middle East, Africa, Asia, Australia, South America, and, of course, in North America, I'm just asking everyone to send love and light to North Korea so that they engage in peace talks with South Korea with the aim of getting rid of all their nuclear weapons, both on the North Korean, on the entire Korean Peninsula, so we can create a better and safer place. And perhaps this can change the course of any future conflicts in the future, because I don't think anyone wants to really have another nuclear war. And I just want to wish the North Korean people and their leader well, and send them lots of love and light so that they can live a happier and a better life. Right, thank you. It worked last July, and hopefully it can work. Hopefully it can work now too. As far as the economy goes, Ed, how do you see that for the United States in the future? You said chaos, but would that?
No, I said chaos on all fronts. But the economy, we're going to default via inflation. I mean, the only way to improve the economy is there is no way. There's no way at all the U.S. can pay its debts, period. Most of your listeners, I think, know that. So what we'll do is we'll default via inflation. We'll just keep printing money, and that's the only way out. And a point will be reached where no one will buy our bonds anymore, and then it's over. It's the end game economically. So right now, the U.S. is panicking, and, you know, completely panicking. The only way, if you look at historically, what we do in a case like this is we are desperate to start a war. Desperate. And so that's where we're at. And we're desperately trying to start wars.
Well, I know back in 2013 that that there were some forces within the United States who wanted desperately to have a war in the Middle East, especially with Syria. And that didn't materialize. And I think it didn't materialize because most people in the United States really didn't want a war.
Now, World War III has started about 3 or 4 years ago. I predicted years ago that World War III wouldn't be a slugfest. It would be a slow burn, a constant slow burn that would start slowly and maintain itself. So that's my feeling about that.
But even if, for example, we hit the launch button for nuclear weapons, it's very likely, don't you think, that our friends from off planet would step in and disable the weapons so they couldn't destroy
them? I already said that. It's not going to happen. They know where every. I'll tell you, I used to look at KH-9 and KH-11 satellite photography, all that top secret stuff. Glowing white spheres parked above U.S. and Soviet boomers. What were they doing? They were inventorying every single warhead on every MIRV bus. A bus is a thing that carries the warheads on top of the missile and slings them out after it goes ballistic. They know where everyone is, and they can shut down, they can zeroize the targeting codes at the drop of a hat. That's why they inventory all the weapons, whether they're in storage or mounted on a delivery vehicle. Yeah, no, they'll step in before. They'll step in. They have stepped in, and they'll do it again if anybody pushes the button.
Well, that actually is a wonderful thought, Ed, when you stop to think about it.
This, but you know, as kids, I don't know how old you are, but when I was a kid, I had to practice these air raid drills, getting under your desk at school and things like that. Yeah. And we had to, the fear had to be there, that we had to have nightmares about that. Because even though we didn't know that it wouldn't be allowed, we still had to think about the consequences of our action, the consequences of even developing nuclear weapons.
True. Well, this begs another question, Ed, is if in fact we have friends from out of town who would shut down all of our nuclear launch buttons if we even tried to launch a nuclear war or somebody tried to, then why have these weapons? Why couldn't we eliminate half the research and development budget for these nuclear weapons and transfer into domestic programs like education or other more worthwhile projects rather than just military hardware?
That's too practical. You have people you have power and greed. Period. Power and greed. That's it. I mean, we go through life, you know, fear and desire. But other people go through life, which it's power and greed. And that's why.
Right. Well, I know that the military-industrial complex, which was turned on, of course, during World War II, I don't think it's ever really been shut down. It just keeps going. And eventually, though, I can see us turning away from that. And living in a much more peaceful planet, but it's going to take some time.
What's going to happen is that geophysically, the great equalizer is coming. When the sun pops, when solar flares start happening and taking out all communications, and almost all, not all communications, but power grids and things like that, and they're not going to come. Grids aren't going to come back up worldwide. We're in a Mad Max scenario where everybody's equal. All those oligarchs on the yachts out there, they won't be able to pay their staff, and their staff will go somewhere else. So it's the great equalizer. It's the great geophysical equalizer.
Sure. Now, I remember on George Norrie talking on Coast to Coast Radio, was it last year or the year before, about his efforts to create a backup system for something just like that. And they were trying to get through something in Congress. I haven't followed it myself yet, but you might know something that I don't, certainly. Have you heard about what they're doing on that regard at all?
Are you talking about the communications, Ted?
Yes, right.
Oh, ham radio, amateur radio operators, they pick up the ball and have for the last 40, 50 years in catastrophes, even Katrina, when all the normal communications go down, and the ham radio operators pop in. So HF radio, if your listeners have especially a handheld HF radio, high-frequency radio, that's the way to go, because not only can you listen in when your own communications go down, listen into what's going on in other places, you can also communicate if you choose to, because it's a transceiver. Mm-hmm. So those things are already in place. You just have to own a piece of equipment like that.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. I wanted to just to back up a little bit, Ed. On my program recently, I had both Dean Radin of the Institute for Noetic Sciences in Petaluma, California. I'm sure you know about him. He's
Of course.
Yeah, great guy, very interested in metaphysical phenomenon. And in his book, Entangled Minds, he writes about one gentleman, one young man in his 20s, who Ed had virtually no brain, but yet he had an IQ of 126. Very smart, very intelligent guy. And the only way to explain that was not explaining it in the physical sense, in the third dimension, but in the fifth dimension, that his mind actually was part of this universal mind. And
correct.
When you were, it was outside of time, and that's what Professor Radin talks about.
There is only one mind. The brain is an oscillator, and we're all immersed in that. That's why, you know, I can know anything about you, and you could, if you're trained, systematically training remote, and vice versa.
Sure.
But because you cannot stop me. There's no telepathic energetic connection. Mm-hmm. Remote viewing, I'm going to the way you exist as a pattern of information in another dimension.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Fascinating. And then downloading the information there.
Mm-hmm. Well, off air after the program, Ed, I'd love to know the winning lottery numbers next week. If you could give me those, that would be great, and I'd be happy to share the proceeds with you.
You know what I can do? You know what? We have a rough time with the lottery. If it's more than three numbers, then it takes it's really a son of a gun to do. But we can always identify the winner. We can actually identify the winner of the big lotteries. But the small lotteries, I teach that in my workshop. In fact, I have I very rarely teach workshops anymore. But in April in Reno, I have one of the fundamentals of remote viewing, and the 18th and the 19th. And when I teach in casinos, on one of the breaks, I show the students, just for fun, how to win at the roulette table and the three-digit lotteries, California three, I think, pick three, things like that, just for fun.
Nice. Nice, nice. Well, I'm sure everyone out there would is intently listening now for the lottery numbers. But
I like what I do. Money is good. It's very useful. I fund my missing children searches by myself and all that. So gold, whether it's raw gold or caches of gold, are a great break for me. I do a lot of Hollywood stuff too. That's a break too. From grim things, but the gold searches in the wilderness are fun as well, and that does more than pay the bills. It's a whole lot more fun than lottery numbers to me.
So Ed, tell my audience, please, how do you do that? Do you visualize like a gold vein or a 3-pound gold nuggets located up in the Rocky Mountains somewhere?
No, we have very systematic ways of walking ourselves into a target. And there's no common denominator, and there's no visualization at all in our work. Is zero, no thinking allowed. Once you set up a target, looking for California's largest exposed gold nugget, that's not on private property or not something like that. Remote viewing is a three-part process: setting up the cue, the matrix search term, actually doing the remote viewing 1 or 2 hours minimally. If it's a larger project like a hydrogen leak on a space shuttle, where we have to describe and sketch the assemblies and sub-assemblies that are leaking, those kinds of things, then you're looking at a 2 or 3 day project. Sometimes they're longer. But for something like this, in the remote viewing itself, there's no thinking allowed. And once you're taught how to do this, it's like playing the piano would be a good analogy. You never think. You keep moving, and you do not think about the note you just played or the music stops. You keep moving until the end of the session, till the piece is played. Then you subject that to analysis. So we teach all that in the workshops.
Interesting. Well, maybe I'm letting the cat out of the bag with this question, Ed, but I have to ask you, for people listening out there around the world who are really interested in remote viewing, what's the first thing you teach them? Is it meditation so that they quiet themselves?
No. Meditation, you're in an alpha state. Think of EEG, electroencephalography-wise. Your brain state in meditation, and we've looked at Tibetan yogis, really good ones. They're in solid alpha state. And when we work, within 4 minutes of beginning a remote viewing session, we're in high theta, absolute high theta, with very little noise, very little energy in the sidebands. Example of a theta state, if you've driven down the highway and for the last 10 minutes you just can't remember what you passed and you're driving, we've all experienced that before.
Sure.
We can't remember the last 10 or 15 minutes of driving. We were highly attentive, but we were in an altered state. And that's the state we're in as remote viewers, as trained remote viewers.
Fascinating.
Where we keep on driving, but, we're not thinking. We're just downloading information in a way that we teach. People can learn this
wonderful.
Advanced, intermediate, or even I teach advanced stuff on my forums and learnrv.com, and it's all free. People can learn via DVDs that we sell, or they can go to these workshops. But it's a very systematic thing. It's not a lay back, relax, and tell me what you eyes are wide open. It's an attention management skill. Very, very systematic, very rigorous.
Fascinating. So basically what you're doing is that you're tuning into the universal mind that surrounds us all.
Exactly. As I said, the brain is an oscillator, and it can tune unconscious attention to any pattern of information anywhere. So yeah, you're right.
Fascinating. I just wanted to tell you briefly, I was on a radio show recently with Dr. Lorraine Hurley. Her website is www.drhurley.net. And I was on her program, I believe, last Monday, February 3rd, from 2 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, or 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern time. And during that interview, I do a lot of psychic work, and I did some meditation. And of all people that popped in, Albert Einstein came in and gave her some messages. And it was really an incredible experience. Have you had that yourself, Ed, where you've been able to talk to famous people or spirits from the other side through your remote viewing work?
It's not part of my paradigm, Ted, at
all. Okay. Okay. All right. Well, I'm just curious. I didn't know whether you'd run into any situation like that. Well, what do you? So we're going to have some challenging times this year, but at the end of the day, we will get through it, and we eventually will become a period of 1,000 years of spiritual advancement and prosperity. Have you traveled, for example, 50 or 100 years? How far can you go out, Ed, in your remote viewing? Is there a limitation in terms of time?
There doesn't seem to be. For instance, there's some artifacts on the moon, and very, very interesting artifacts. They've been abandoned, and they're small robots that used to mine the moon, and they belonged to some race. I don't know who the race was, but sure. These robots mine the moon, and some of the structures, the shard and things, the so-called shard and things like that, uh-huh. are very interesting. But we believe that these things are all tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of years old, in some regards. And some of the, 30 years of doing UFO stuff. In fact, we've been sponsored by Hans Adam von Huns Liechtenstein, the Crown Prince of Liechtenstein, out in the desert with him. I got to select the best engineers in the country to look at Close Encounters of the Second Kind. Mm-hmm. All they want to do is to back engineer the technology. But I told them, I said, look, we are looking at probably technologies, and I use that term very loosely, nominally 100 million years ahead of us. Don't try to figure them out. Wow. But it was funny. The Skunk Works was still trying to back engineer stuff.
Interesting. Well, humans, I think, by nature, are very curious, Ed, and we always
want to. Which is a good thing.
Yeah, which is a good thing. And we always want to try to figure things out to see how they work, certainly. And
We want closure, and we analyze. In fact, when I teach remote viewing, you are not allowed to analyze on the fly. You are no imagination. You must recognize when imagination is overlaying the target data, and you are not allowed to think or analyze on the fly. And that's difficult to do. So day one of training is very frustrating. People have never been asked to do this before. But we teach all that, and I'm a good coach.
Interesting. So, given some time, you could do some remote viewing now to see where I am and you can see the room where I am and where I'm broadcasting from.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. totally. Too. In fact, I'm working with the FBI right now on one of the 10 most wanted cases. I can't talk a lot about the case, but that's exactly what I did. Pinpointed this clown's current residence, where his watering holes are, tracked them throughout the day, turned it over to the Bureau. And yes, there is a big reward.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. You can go out and help them find people that are
monsters.
Doing monsters that they shouldn't. That's excellent. Do you have any plans for any books in the future, Ed? I mean, you certainly.
No. I wrote my autobiography's out on the streets and it's been out. I don't plan on writing any more books. Just projects. I like I'm action guys. I like to remote view and then go out in the field and bring closure to those kinds of things. So my autobiography is Tell Me What You See. Remote viewing cases from the world's premier psychic spy, and my co-author was Joel Harry Newman.
Oh, interesting.
George Norrie did the foreword to that. And then some of your listeners know I was I trained Sir Ben Kingsley in Tom Cruise's office for Suspect Zero, but Kevin Spacey plays me in the Men Who Stare at Goats. This anal retentive guy in the military, and if you have the DVD, I'm interviewed backstory on the DVD.
Oh, how fascinating!
So I get to have some fun too in my work rather than just murdered kids and child murders and.
Yeah. Well, my foster mother Terry, she taught me how to contact the other side, and she used to work for local police departments in the Seattle area, finding missing and lost children. And sometimes it was fairly depressing because, of course, she'd find these kids and they weren't alive. Some weren't alive.
I've got one that is alive, and I can't talk about the case, but
sure.
the it's the best thing I'm doing right now. This one's still alive. But I have to see, with the dead kids, if you're dealing with a body, it's no problem to talk about the case.
Right.
But with a living child, one wrong move on my part or my team's part, and we've got some good guys, one wrong move, though, and the captors will panic and do something stupid.
Well, let's do this. Let's do this. Let's use the power of good intention, and I'm going to ask my listeners all over the world to send love and light to you now, Ed, to help you find this missing child on this case that you've seen him, and help you get this child out of harm's way into safety. I'd like everyone to send their good thoughts to Ed right now to help him in his work to find this child. Wow, I just got this room that I'm in just lit up. That often happens when angels come in to help. And
I wish I could talk to you more about the case. And I am a firm believer in angels. Angels have kept me alive, and I don't know why I'm still alive, but it's been a guardian angel.
Well, Ed, you know, you have a purpose in life. Everyone does. And you're fulfilling that purpose now by telling people that of the good things you can do through remote viewing to help make this planet a better and happier place. And for that, I'm so grateful for your work. And I know that my spirit friends on the other side now are telling me you will find that missing child here within the next couple of weeks.
The child, that case is the most important case in my career, actually.
Okay, they're saying 2 weeks you'll have it resolved and this child will be delivered unharmed to you, to the police authorities. Isn't that nice? Well, my friends, we've got a couple of minutes left, and before I want you to have the final comments, Ed, before we finish up today's interview. But I just want to say that during the next hour, we're bringing on Ichan Derive. He's one of Japan's most interesting and also very interesting remote viewer. He's actually from Scotland, but he lives in Japan. And then I wanted to tell everyone that beginning in the middle of March, on Mondays from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Seattle time, I will be co-hosting Dr. Lorraine Hurley's wonderful radio program called Uncommon Awareness. The program is syndicated on the Genesis Communications Network out of Minneapolis, heard on hundreds of radio stations across the United States and Canada, and I will be on her show, hosting her shows on Mondays. I'll be available at www.drhurley.net. That's drhurley.net. Also, if you go to her website, you can also listen to my interview with her last Monday, February 3rd, in which Albert Einstein, Robert Kennedy, J. Robert Oppenheimer, and some other famous and interesting people did come on the interview with us. And with that, Ed, we got a couple of minutes, and I'd like for you to please, you've got a couple of minutes here. I'd love for you to wrap up your wonderful interview today.
I think I'd like to wrap it up by saying that people, if they don't already realize this, they should. The unconscious is your best friend. It's your complement of being. It's your higher mind rather than your lower egoic mind, the one that thinks it knows the best choice of mates, the best career and all that. Unconscious is always there, and you only have access to it during moments of revelation, which are rare for most people, and when you sleep. But when you sleep, it gets all mucked up with all the fears and the desires and the things of the day. So that's why I'm not easily entertained. I stuck with remote viewing for 30 years. I'm still in awe because I know that we can use it for ourselves, too. I have not been to a doctor in 26 years, and I've had some serious injuries, and I've used remote viewing to point out what I need to do to fix myself. So it is your best friend, and learning how to really have a clear channel to it using remote viewing is an incredible tool.
In Luxor, in the Upper Nile, in Egypt, Ed, there's a series of hieroglyphics ancient Egyptian sculptures there, and one of the most important things the Egyptian doctors back 5,000 years ago would say, they said that every disease was dis-ease. In other words, it always had a spiritual cause. So if you can identify that spiritual cause, you could cure yourself or cure others as well.
I think that's more advanced than what I do right now. I use this tool to collect information, as much technical detail in as short a period of time as possible. We avail ourselves of our natural birthright, being psychic. I'm about as psychic as a rock, but by dint of my labor over the years, I became good. When I teach really gifted psychics remote viewing, they can become all-stars rather than just pros. About 15% of the population globally is above average, but very few of them actually realize their potential because they didn't have a tool until RV.
Thank you so much for coming on today, Ed. I hope you have a wonderful year, and please stay tuned for our next guest next hour.